I would have been quite happy if they just kept the American woman, quite frankly. It wouldn't have bothered me in the slightest.
Mm. Johnny's going to kill us when he finds out we've just spent the last 5 minutes talking about iOS.
He's not here. Yeah, go crazy.
That's true. This week I'm back to iOS. Oh, dear.
You just imagine the kind of Wrath of Khan scream from Johnny, can't you? No! Oh,
absolutely. I can just imagine GarageBand going, well, that bit's going for a start.
He's just going to edit it all out, isn't he?
This is Back to the Mac from the Q Broadcasting Network. You can follow us on Twitter, at BTTMPodcast, or at Q Broadcasting. You can find us on the internet at Q.am. That's Q-U-E.am. Enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to Back to the Mac, episode 16. Back to the Mac, it's a show about Mac stuff. We don't do iOS, well, apart from when we're talking before the show, but that's another matter, and Johnny will punish us for that, no doubt. Tonight, we're going stripped down and lightweight on the show. It's just myself and Jordan tonight, but I'm sure we'll manage to whip up a bit of discussion between it, even though every single corner of the news world seems to be trying not to give us anything to talk about. Nothing really to mention particularly from last week's show, so we'll just dive straight in. First thing that's come up is it's actually a Microsoft related item again, Johnny, sorry about this, but there are people out there who use their Macs and put Windows on it, you know, there you go, live with it. And is an interesting article I was reading, which was just, I don't know about you, Jordan, I thought this was an incredibly attractive offer.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I do a lot of web development, so I'm needing, and I have Parallels and Windows 7 installed on my Mac, just so I can test IE. That's all it's there for. And the fact that Microsoft had offered this quick start package where there was a USB stick with a copy of Parallels 8 and Windows 8 as well, for a ridiculously small price of $25 was, I thought, an absolute steal. It wasn't a stripped down version of Windows, it was Windows 8 Pro. So yeah, I thought this was a fantastic idea to coincide with Microsoft making sure, you know, doing this big push on Internet Explorer.
Yeah, I just couldn't get over that when I read it. I was like, $25? They're just basically giving it away, aren't they?
Yeah, definitely. They've been aggressively pricing Windows 8 for a while now, I think since it was released. They did an offer where it was a lot cheaper to begin with. I think maybe not necessarily to compete with, since it's not really much of a competition in terms of sales and how to use it, but to compete with something like OS X Lion and Mountain Lion, where it's about £15 to £25 to upgrade. So the fact that we're no longer in an age where an operating system will cost you £150 to buy, I think Microsoft have eventually adjusted to that. But yeah, $25 for Parallels 8, which is normally, I think, $60 alone, and Windows 8 is, yeah, a fantastic deal. It's a shame it's sold out now, unfortunately.
Yeah, I thought it'd be worth mentioning for people to keep their eyes and ears open about that, because if that comes back out again, you want to grab that. I was wondering if it would be... Mind you, I think it's expensive to become a Windows developer, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not too sure exactly what it was aimed at. I'm assuming it was just aimed for encouraging probably maybe iOS developers. I know we're not meant to say the I word. But I think maybe it's trying to encourage maybe iOS developers to give Windows Mobile a try and a way of getting onto that. I think for basic development, I think it is free, kind of like how Xcode is.
Right.
But for me at least, and I know for a lot of web designers, that would have been absolutely fantastic to have. And it was a shame it was a limited run. I think since Mac users aren't going to be their primary customer, having this option where if it was bundled with Parallels, I think they could have continued to offer this quite nicely. Still had a lot of uptake from Mac users, but I couldn't see that affecting their core audience of PC users that much.
Yeah, and you would have thought as well that, you know, if you make it as cheap as that and you, like say, include the Parallels on there, you're making it quite frictionless for Mac-based developer, aren't you? And it's going to, you're going to kind of think, oh, well, do you know what, I might give it a bit of a go. Microsoft really haven't got an awful lot to lose by trying it, I think.
No, I agree. I remember when Parallels 7 was released, they had the option to download the Windows 8 consumer preview or developer preview or whatever it was called, and it was free, and you download it within Parallels, and it gave you the option to try Windows 8 effectively, and I thought that was a great feature, and I knew a lot of people who would use that. So yeah, if Microsoft were a, you know, would ever decide to do this again, you know, certainly get a customer from me. I tried to go on the website to buy this, and by the time I saw the link, the website had crashed. It wasn't even accessible. So I think this sold out, I think, very rapidly, which I think is a good sign to Microsoft that maybe something like this again in the future is going to be a great idea.
Yeah, it may be that they'll do that and think, oh, right, there was a lot of interest in this. Maybe we should, you know, roll this out further in a different way, you know. So it's, I mean, are they still charging sort of like £100 or so for Windows?
They still do an upgrade version and a full version, as far as I'm aware, which I always thought was a little bit silly. I think, you know, OS X's always had it great where it was just one disc and you either bought it or you didn't.
Yeah.
I've just searched on Google Shopping, and if you search for Windows 8 Pro retail copy for one computer, it's £120. So it's probably what, $200 maybe? But that's with our 20% VAT on there, so the Americans will probably get that adjusted. But yeah, it's still expensive, comparative to what you'd get with OS X, where it's, what, I think £24 for Mountain Lion if you want to upgrade.
Mm.
So yeah, it is still quite costly.
I can't understand why, you know, if Windows are really wanting to get lots of traction with the latest version, why they're not rolling it out at that kind of price point.
Yeah, it does seem a little bit strange that their full version is still quite expensive, and there's always this problem with Windows 8 upgrade as well. The same as most, you know, most other Windows upgrades, where you need the original disk or the original software or whatever. You can buy Windows 8 upgrade, which is, I think, £50, which allegedly, and don't quote me on this or sue me on this, but you can do a full install with that.
Right.
So whether or not that's the case, or whether or not people may want to save themselves, you know, nearly £100, I have no idea. But I think Microsoft will probably be quite lax with that. The same way I think Apple are quite lax with their, they don't have a serial number you have to enter when you're doing an install. They don't have any checks of any kind. I think because it's so cheap now, it's just not worth, you know, using a copy that you may have obtained through, let's just say, let's not, you know, not the App Store, but you know, it's just so cheap that, and it's so easy to do. And I think the same with Windows. I think it should be a lot easier to do and a lot cheaper as well. Especially if you want to encourage people to jump on this Windows version, which, you know, has had quite a bit of bad press recently.
Well, it's interesting because you just made me think there about when I first got my Mac and I got a copy of iWork to go with it. And was it iWork? No, iLife, I think, was what you had to install separately, didn't you? With GarageBand and iPhoto. iWork comes with it, doesn't it?
iWork's still separate. iLife did come with the Mac, but it was usually on a second disc. Or it was
iLife,
yeah,
right. Must be iWork I'm thinking of then. And I remember at the time being like said, like, oh, you know, how many computers or whatever. Now, at the time, I did just have the one. And I later got another Mac, and when you looked at it, like you said, there was no like license key or anything like that. So even though they were saying like, oh, you should, you know, it's not like a family license or what have you, there was nothing to stop you installing it on another computer. And now actually all of that's pretty much redundant, because if you buy any of these things through the Mac App Store, you can download them to as many of your computers that are registered to you as you like. So I think Apple have moved away from that idea altogether now.
Yeah, it's an honor system, because if you can sign into any of the Macs that you own and download this app once, it's, you know, it's a bargain if you want to download something that's £25 on your account. But if you're in a home, for example, then you could have this same app running on two or three of your Macs if you have them. Because they do that, instead of losing a customer because they'd make them pay £25 three times, they're gaining a customer because they think, I can buy it once and I'm legally allowed to use this three or four times.
On everything, so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and I think it works well. There's no serial numbers because it's all tied to your Apple ID, which works very well. So I think it's a great system with the App Store now.
And if people didn't realise this as well, the interesting thing is, like, you know, you can install it on a Mac that, say, your partner's using, and they'll still be able to access it, even though it's installed in your side of the Mac. Because our MacBook that we have, I'm on it and my wife's on it, but whenever I install stuff, she's able to use it as well. So certainly Apple products anyway. So it's not, it kind of installs on that device, doesn't it, rather than...
Yeah, exactly. It's licensed to everyone on that computer. So
yeah.
If you're signed into the App Store on one account and your wife has another, yeah, they can use that machine, that app on that machine.
Yeah, it's fantastic, really.
Yeah.
The other news item, and we did say it is really scant on news this week, to do with Reader for Mac and iPad were free for a limited time. Now, just to kind of bring people into the loop, Reader is an RSS news reader. And with the discontinued Google Reader, I think a lot of people have been wanting to jump ship and find some way of doing it. I think that's probably why Reader's doing this, to get as many people as possible. Are is RSS feeds anything that you use?
Yeah, I'm one of the firm users of RSS feeds. I love Google. Well, I'd loved Google Reader. I subscribe to a lot of RSS feeds, and I use Reader on the Mac. Bought it as soon as it came out. So it's good to see this is going free until the next version. But yeah, RSS feeds is something that I use religiously. I'm not a fan of having the same sites in Twitter or Facebook or wherever, because they tend to just pass me by. And RSS, I feel, is more of a nicer way to interact with some of these websites, where I don't have to visit the website every time, or I can just have them all in one go and then just sit with my iPad and just read through them. And when I'm done, I'll just mark everything else I haven't seen as read. So yeah, it's good to see Reader for the Mac and iOS both free until the new version comes out, which will integrate with other services that arrive after Google Reader is discontinued.
Mm. Can you just for everyone's benefit, and I've got to be honest, this is something that I have already just sort of got my head around, but I'd be interested to hear it again from yourself. Could you explain to us what an RSS reader does?
Yes, certainly. So most websites have a way to output something called an RSS feed. It's basically just a big text file in XML format. So it kind of looks like, if you've ever used HTML code, it looks very similar to that. So if you're on a website, for example, say the Back to the Mac podcast, that relies on an RSS feed to manage that. And the feed will contain, for the purposes of a podcast, the show title, the description, the download link. For a news page like, say, Engadget or unofficial Apple weblog, then it'll contain the article title, the article content, the author, maybe a link as well. It's effectively a way to access the articles from a website without visiting the website. And most, if not all, blogging platforms tend to have this. So WordPress is baked in, and most websites. Twitter even offered RSS feeds for their users up until recently, until it was discontinued, as Twitter did a big push towards getting everyone onto their own service instead, and closing it off a little bit. So for a lot of people who use RSS feeds, you use Google Reader. They swung in, provided this free service that offered syncing capabilities for everyone to use for free. So all developers switched to that. Then after a few years, now Google are saying they're discontinuing it, which means from the last 4 or 5 or how many years Google Reader has been around and dominated the market, there isn't been any competition because there was no competition to compete against the service Google was providing. So a lot of people are clamoring now to try and build replacement services. So one of the applications that was a big worry about whether or not it'd continue was Reader. There was a big concern about whether they would continue operating because it was a Google Reader application. So with them releasing this for free, because they're working on a version 2, means that there's going to be life left in RSS, even though a lot of people have switched to Twitter. How do you keep track of news sites? Do you use things like Twitter and Facebook, or do you just bookmark them?
I use sort of a combination of, mainly I use Twitter for a lot of my favourite sites, and then I'll send them on to Pocket and then try and read them later if I haven't got time there and then, although half the time I forget I've got stuff in Pocket and never go back and read it. So I've just got a huge stuff load up in Pocket, and at some point I'll have to read it. The other thing that I use as well is Flipboard and Zeit. I try to, you know, look for articles and things that interest me through there. Just occasionally it's nice to sort of, I don't really read sort of newspapers and stuff anymore. It's nice to sort of have it put in that format because it feels a bit like a newspaper style the way that it's done. I don't know. Maybe I kind of got into this a lot later than perhaps people like yourself and Johnny, and RSS feed and readers is something that's kind of passed me by completely.
It's a technology that's, a lot of people argue it's now redundant with things like social media. I started using RSS feeds before I joined Twitter and before Facebook was even available for everyone to use back when, you know, it was only for students. So I've always used RSS for as long as I can remember now. And if you've come from something like Pocket, for example, it's like Pocket or Instapaper for websites where everything is laid out by the RSS reader. So it's just plain contents. There's no web page to load. It is just the core content, and the RSS reader does the work. And Reader was exceptional at that. It really did feel like you were using something like Pocket or Instapaper to read your articles. It actually made it quite pleasurable. And you had options like sending them to social media. But for a lot of people, just like you, they don't use these services now because there are services like Flipboard and Twitter and Facebook and even, you know, a lot of websites include Pocket support and Instapaper support. So you can just visit the website and go, that looks like a long article I fancy reading. Instead of having to subscribe to the website or tweet it, you can just click on a link and just add it to Pocket immediately. So it has, I think it's something, if you use RSS a lot, you're probably someone who's always been using RSS. It's something that I think if someone was to come to what today and say, right, I want to see what all this RSS is about, they'll take one look at it and go, this is Twitter to me. I can just carry on using Twitter how I use it now.
A lot of people, somebody was commenting that they were saying it is quite handy in terms of, like, if you've got a lot going on Twitter, if you can't get to Flipboard that regularly, then it is a good way of never really missing anything from your favourite websites. Is that fair?
Yeah, with Twitter, it is very much a streaming service, so your tweets come in as they are posted. So if a website posts, say, 5 articles in the space of a few minutes, but you don't log in for, say, 4 hours, they'll be at the bottom of your feed. And if you're like me, the first thing I do is jump to the top of my Twitter stream and then slowly scroll down until I get a bit tired of reading them all, and then I'll just go back to the top again. So if something gets, if I don't go on Twitter for a day, for example, if I've been out and I've not had my phone with me, I'll never see it. With RSS, there is the argument that you can just get a bit too overwhelmed with the number of unread articles. So it badges them, kind of like how mail badges unread messages. And
right,
you can come to RSS, and I'd turn the badge off because if I didn't, mine would say about 450.
Oh, God.
And, yeah, you see that number and you think, no, I mark all as red. And I do that every now and again. I think, I've not read these. Mark all as red. And I've defeated the purpose of it being there anyway. So, but I think that's more of a habit than anything else.
Because it kind of gets, with anything like that, it starts to become a bit soul-destroying and you feel demoralised, don't you? Like, certainly I do with Twitter. It's great that me numbers of sort of followers and whatnot is expanding on Twitter, but yeah. After you start to think, God, how do I keep up with all of this?
Yeah, I've tried to use Twitter lists, and I love Tweetbot, and I use that on iOS. I don't have it on the Mac, so... And that has great features for managing lists. So I don't need to follow anyone, but I can still add them to a list.
Yeah.
I try to create lists, and I've got Twitterific on the Mac, and I can view the lists. I always forget. And, you know, if I click on a list now in Twitterific, the last time I've been in there was 8 days ago. It was the last time I was in that list before it refreshes. So I forget about them.
Yeah.
It's not in my stream. I'm used to Twitter just saying... Here's all the tweets and here's all your replies. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one area I try to look at every day is to see if anyone's mentioned us or tweeted at us, you know. I'll always try to go to that. But in terms of just browsing the Twitter stream, some stuff's just having to float by now. I can't keep up.
Yeah, I can't tend to follow more than, say, 50 or 60 people before. It's overwhelming even then. So I just... to just skip things now and again and just go, right, I've been off it for a day, scroll to the top, start again.
Yeah, well, there was a thing, wasn't there? And I think Apple used this in their managerial thing that said the most that a human being could cope with is 100 contacts at any one time.
Yeah, it's something like 100, 150 friends or something on Facebook as well, where after that, they're not really friends, they're just casual acquaintances or something like that, where... You can't form 100 or so meaningful relationships with somebody.
Yeah.
So anything else is just there for the sake of being a number. Or, you know, you know, just, oh, look, I've got this many friends. You've got that many friends.
And did, what's it called? Did app.net deliberately limit you to that number for that reason? Was I hearing...
Oh, I know app.net limit the free accounts to, I think, 40. And I think that was more because at that point you're probably using app.net quite a lot, so you probably should be paying for it.
Yeah.
But it would certainly make sense. I don't think they'd ever limit how many people you could follow, but I think it's probably not a good idea. If you're following 40, I think definitely obviously be a paid-for member, but beyond 40, I think that's going to be a lot of people to keep track of. And yeah, sometimes see people like Stephen Fry, he says he's following almost as many people who are following him, which
that is
impossible. That just means he's not interacting with Twitter. He's just using it to post and he's probably replying to messages sent to him.
Odd one now and then,
you can't follow 2 million people and expect to keep track of them.
He's a clever guy.
Definitely, yeah. I don't think he's that clever. He can cram more than 24 hours in the day, though.
I bet he's you know, he's so well connected. He's probably got Google Glass, hasn't he? He's just sits there all day with it scrolling in front of his eye.
He's got one in each eye. He's got two Apple Eye watches.
Yeah, I bet you'll be one of the first to get one of them.
Oh, absolutely.
So would you recommend Reader for Mac if anyone's looking for that?
Oh, wholeheartedly. It's the only RSS reader I've ever used on the Mac that is worth its salt. Yeah, definitely.
Just having a look at the Mac App Store now, and it is still free, because this is the problem. Sometimes we're putting these pieces together, isn't it, Jordan? you get this stuff, and by the time you get around to recording the podcast, they've already changed. So, but at the time of recording, it's still free. So,
it's supposed to be free until version 2 arrives, which will be Google Reader-less, and we'll be able to use a lot of probably some other services that are going to be coming out. So there'll be a Reader 2 on the App Store, I suspect, once it's released. But for now, at least, Reader's great to use. The only caveat I would say to anyone using it is Google Reader does expire on July the 1st, so you can use it for about 3 months, and then it won't work anymore. So it's worth trying it just to see what Reader is like, but I wouldn't use it as my primary RSS reader if I've never used if I've not already been using it, simply because it's ticking. You know, it's got the clock ticking on it.
It's got a ticking bomb. Yeah. Yep. Is there any? Are you aware of any good RSS feeds and that don't rely on Google that'll survive the apocalypse?
Yeah, if you don't require any syncing services, then NetNewsWire is available. I think that's a free and a paid-for app. I think it's ad-supported, right, which works. It just doesn't have any syncing capabilities. So if you use an iPhone or another iOS device, then you're not going to be able to use that. However, there are other services coming out that will do RSS syncing, just like how usual email works. But there's a few out there. Not enough to go into any massive detail about them, but there are big websites like Dig who are going to be releasing their own service as well. There's a bit of a race now to find out who's going to release the best service that will closest mirror Google's own system, because there's so many apps out there that when Google goes, unless there's a service that a lot of these developers can switch to, a lot of people are going to start having to be forced to use other apps, which isn't necessarily going to be the greatest experience for them, but you know, time will tell, and hopefully there'll be something great out soon.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly the just going on to the readerapp.com, the developer of Reader is wanting to keep it going after Google Reader closes on July 1st. So obviously it must be working on making it a standalone and integrating with something called Feedbin. So I've heard that name, but I don't know what that's about. So there you go. So, but you probably have to update to version 2, won't you, to get that? So
yeah, that'll be part of version 2, which may or may not come out before July the 1st. I hope so. It gives people time to switch, but at least you've got a few months if you want to see what RSS is like or how Reader is, because I wouldn't suspect Reader's going to have a massive design change because it works so well. It's one of those apps that it has it nailed down. It's perfect.
Yeah. Right. We'll move on, I think, to another thing, which is an item that you've had a Jordan about, Tim Cook getting in hot water with the Chinese.
Yeah. So over the last couple of days, Tim Cook has issued an apology to Chinese customers and has said that there's going to be certain changes in the way policy was communicated, and he didn't want the Chinese market to think that Apple was being arrogant in any way. But it addresses a problem that the Chinese have had with Apple for a long time regarding their iPhone 4 and 4S repair policy. Now, this isn't necessarily related to the Mac itself. We're talking about an iOS device, but it has ramifications for warranty over there. Usually when you get an iPhone service at the Genius Bar, it's either repaired, some of the components are swapped out, such as on an iPhone 4 or 4S, the camera, the backplate if you've broken it, or the battery. Or if the whole unit was to be replaced, you get it replaced with it's not a refurbished unit, but it's one that isn't brand new in the box. It's gone through Apple's service plant, so it's had all new parts that are needed parts. But it may be comprised of some refurbished components. This doesn't mean it's been used. It doesn't mean someone's bought it and returned it. It means if a phone was returned to Apple because, let's say, you didn't want it, the camera will be taken out of it, inspected. If the camera's good enough to be used again, it will be used as a service part. It's how the automobile industry works. Most of the parts you buy, from an exhaust to, I don't know, probably part of the engine, they're normally refurbished in some way. So that's what Apple do.
Yeah, no point wasting it, is it,
exactly,
really?
Unfortunately, that's not what's supposed to happen under Chinese law.
Right.
When you have a device replaced or repaired, for example, a phone, it has to be replaced and with a new one, and the warranty clock restarts. So it's not replaced under warranty or repaired under warranty. It's replaced and a new one-year warranty starts. And Apple weren't doing that, apparently.
Right.
And they got into a bit of hot water a few weeks ago when it appeared the Chinese state media organised a big campaign with a bunch of Chinese celebrities to take to social media and complain about Apple, and it looks like it worked. So, although it was ironic, a lot of them did tweet with Apple devices, so you can't win them all. One of them in particular, I think, was using Tweetbot or something, and it swiftly got deleted. But anyway, Apple have had to revise that, and they've apologised for it, and they've reassured the Chinese market that they're not in a position to believe they're arrogant or better than other companies in China. And when a device was repaired, for example, the camera, then the backplate would normally be the same one. Because, again, like you said, not much point wasting it. However, it's now going to be replacement with new devices, I believe, and a new one-year warranty starting. So it'll be fresh replacement device, brand new warranty. So it's as though the clock resets. So technically, if your phone fails every 11 months, you've got a phone for life. But this has probably potential ramifications for the Mac market as well, since I don't believe they're under the same regard, since they're not classed as a phone. Obviously, they're classed as a Mac. But whether or not the Chinese market, when the Mac grows any further, as the iPhone has exploded over there, whether this will have any potential ramifications for Mac repairs as well, since they go through the same system. They use refurbished parts, and you certainly don't get a new Mac every time it goes wrong. You have a repair, like you get, you don't get a new car if it goes wrong, you get a repair. So it'd be interesting to see what happens when it become, you know, when it comes to Mac repairs and Mac problems as well. Nothing at the moment, but
what interests me about this is the different approach to the Chinese as to oppose, say, the UK and Europe, because it seems like there's a very different attitude going on there. People have been complaining bitterly, as we know, in UK and Europe about sort of Apple warranties and things like that, fairly vocally for a long time. And we've talked about this on previous shows, so we'll not go over it again. But interesting that the Chinese got very vocal about it, and Apple have quickly kind of changed their stance. And it does make me think everything that's going on, whenever you see stuff going on at Apple now, is clearly focused on getting into China, isn't it? You know, they seem desperate to crack that market. So I think that, you know, they've really kind of been sort of sensitive to anything that could disrupt their image in China. Whereas I think they don't have to be so concerned about that over here. They're well and truly established. So, but yeah, I just saw that. I thought, oh, that's right. We can complain for ages here, but you're not going to listen to us.
But because I could imagine the BBC organising a bunch of celebrities to start posting about Apple. Celebrities like Bruce Forsyth and Anton Deck, just complaining that their Apple product isn't quite what it should be. The warranty isn't
Don't say that, Jordan. I'm being made to suffer. Let's get ready to rumble on a daily basis in my house at the moment.
That was a crime that we all thought was committed years ago,
and it's back to haunt us again.
Woody Allen says history repeats itself. It has to. No one ever listens first time around. That's about right.
That sounds absolutely right. Yeah.
Just to add to this Chinese thing as well, apparently it's 2-year coverage for repairs and all warranty over there as well. So when a repair is, a part is replaced, it receives 2-year coverage with main parts. And like you said, it's really getting into the Chinese market. It's their biggest growing market, and it's where Apple manufacture most of their products. So it seems, best to keep the Chinese happy so that they can continue operating as they need to.
The costs of, I would have thought the costs would be quite good as well, in terms of, if you're making it in that country and then you've just got to sort of boot it around the corner and sell it, that's going to be quite good in
definitely.
Terms of
profit for them.
So
yeah, definitely. It must cost them quite a bit to ship thousands and hundreds of thousands of phones across the globe every day.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially on the kind of deadlines that they'll be wanting. So, the other thing that's interesting, just as a general point, is again, it's kind of pointing to quite a listening, apologetic Apple compared to, under Tim Cook compared to Steve Jobs. Do you think?
Yeah, I mean, something like this shows, I think there is definitely a more open Apple. I mean, if this was, I hate the phrase, what would Steve do? Or whatever the phrase is. But
there's no way you would get an apology out of him over this.
Oh, no. The only response you'd get was, no, sent from my iPhone. That's all you'd get.
Absolutely.
It'd be, suck it up or something like that.
Absolutely, live with it.
Yeah, Timmy's been a little more open, and I think he's avoiding those types of missteps, because whether or not they helped or hindered Apple, we don't know, because all we see is the phenomenal success that they've had, and we attribute that all to the leadership of Steve Jobs. And a lot of people say, well, if Steve were here, and, you know, well, this is what Steve would do. But you think, well, let's turn it around. What would have happened if Steve wasn't that douchebag that he was? What if he was actually quite tactful? Maybe Apple could have been in an even better position
already.
You know, he talked about going thermonuclear with Android, and Tim Cook's happy to continue that, but he reins it in slightly.
Yeah.
But maybe if Steve wasn't so hot-headed, then where could they have been? So, yeah, it's something like this, I think, is a sign of Apple being a little more open, but I think this is a sign for the better.
Did you ever watch the emergency keynote, for want of a better way of putting it, around the iPhone 4 and the whole antenna gate
that was a surprise, wasn't it, when that happened?
That keynote, I thought was just fantastic. You just felt like Steve Jobs wanted to go out there and just throw them at people and go, there's your bloody rubber band, now get on with it. He was just so, like, his whole attitude was just like, look, this isn't a problem. I can't believe I've had to sort this out.
Yeah. And the thing was, it was such a non-problem. It was
a non-problem, I think, actually. Yeah. I think the technology and the press blew it out of all proportion.
Yeah, there's a great Tumblr website that David Chartier does called don'tholditwrong.tumblr.com.
Right.
And ever since everyone lunged on the iPhone 4 going, oh, you can't hold it wrong, you know, pull it in a certain way.
Yeah.
This is a compilation of all the different instruction manuals from non-Apple phones that say, don't hold it in a certain way. And we've got the Samsung Galaxy S, the Nokia 920, their latest Windows phone,
right?
Galaxy Note 2, Lumia 900, Galaxy S3, Galaxy Note, and all of them have this, don't hold it wrong or you will cause signal issues. And it is something that affects all phones.
That's brilliant. I'll have to have a look at that.
It was baffling that everyone jumped on that, but the fact Steve did hold that keynote was a bit of a surprise. I suspect that was probably more of a, well, all right, but if I absolutely have to, I'll do it, but I'm not happy about this.
Yeah, I think it was probably the board going, Steve, you're going to have to do this. You're going to have to nip this in the bud, or you're going to ruin the iPhone 4.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was seen as a landmark product, so probably a little bit of humble pie.
It was so funny, the look on his face. It's like, oh, right,
yeah,
okay.
If eyes could talk, my God.
Have your rubber band.
We're going to give you this case that costs literally pennies to make you guys feel better. It takes a few pennies to make you feel better. I hope you're happy.
Yeah, happy now.
That should have been the last slide.
Yeah.
That would be not fantastic. One more thing. Happy
one
now.
One more thing. Happy now. Yeah.
I think we've got our show title there, actually.
Yeah, happy now. That should be, Johnny, that's a show title. Right, if you, I couldn't believe the other week when Johnny said he hadn't read Steve's biography. Have you read it?
I'm going to say no.
However,
I have got it and I'm due to read it. There was one years ago published, an unofficial one, and I can't remember what it was called. I think it was Icon, the unofficial story of Steve Jobs. And I read that a long time ago, but that was up until, when was that published? Published 2005, so that was just published before the switch to Intel. I read that.
I read that,
quite good. But no, I've not read the official one, unfortunately.
If you enjoyed Icon, you'll really enjoy this.
I've been meaning to read it for, God, I bought it in the iBook store ages ago, but I've just not had the time to sit down and read it. I've been wondering, every time I've done it, I've gone, I'll read it tomorrow. And then it's been 6 months and I've gone, I've not read it yet.
Yeah, it is a really good read. You'd enjoy it. And I think it's written so well that anybody, you know, could enjoy reading it. One of the chaps who goes to my gym, he's a fitness instructor, and he enjoys reading. He's read it from front to back, and he read it before I did, which I was furious with him about. And he thought it was a fantastic read as well, because, you know, from a learning point of view, he was interested to know what made Steve Jobs Steve Jobs, and how did he become so successful, sort of thing. And it's just a very, and like you say, he's not a massive technology person, and probably there would have been some of it that would have not interested him in terms of like when it starts getting a little bit technical, but it doesn't get that technical, so anybody can enjoy it. Yeah. Oh God. Yeah, I think you'll enjoy it.
Really good things about it, and I'm going to try and make the time, I think, this month to actually get around to reading this.
Yeah, it was like a little, for me, it was like a little sort of a moment sitting down with it for the first time and starting to read it. I was like, and let's begin. Because I'd waited and waited. I'd been sitting on my shelf. I got it as a Christmas present, and I'd been reading other things in the meantime. And I was like, right, I'm not going to give up on the books I'm reading, because I'm terrible for doing that. I'll start on one book and skip off to something else, and then come. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
My real reading habits are nearly as bad as my internet habits. So I was like, nope, I'm going to finish the book I'm doing, and then I'll read the Steve Jobs biography. So all the time it was like, you know, spoiler alert when people were putting stuff on the internet. I was like, I'm not going to read it, you know. So yeah, get yourself stuck into it, and Johnny, for God's sakes, buy it, man. What's the matter with you? So we'll move on now to hot hardware, software. And we've kind of got, well, we've got one of each, actually. We've got a bit of hardware and a bit of software. Anything that you want us to add to that, Jordan, that's come up in your radar?
No, I'm looking forward to talking about this particular piece of hardware.
Yeah, I don't know how we could talk that much about it, but
this was shocked.
Yeah, God, I know. This is something that was sent to us by one of our regular listeners, Neil Cochran, and he pointed me to this and said, "Maybe this should be one of your cool things," which was said in a very tongue in cheek way, I think. But what this is Just Mobile, who manufacture lots of, I've got to say, brilliant products. They're all often made out of brushed aluminium, and they're made to a superb standard, but they cost a lot. Have brought out, drum roll, a headphone stand. Do you need a headphone stand? I'm not sure, but do you need a £40 headphone stand? Is another question altogether. So what's your thoughts on this, John?
I'd like to answer that question by saying absolutely not. The thing is, it looks very nice. It would look very nice next to an aluminium MacBook. But for £40, I would rather spend my money on something a bit more worthwhile. Yeah. If you want a headphone stand and you need to have something that will keep your headphones hung up for some reason, search for a banana stand. They're about £5 and they do the exact same job.
Yeah.
It's just, there's absolutely no need for an aluminium stand that doesn't appear to do anything else that apart from cost £40.
No. It doesn't do anything. It isn't adjustable.
It just doesn't have a USB port. It's not plug into the mains.
Nope. It just sits there. And that is literally it. I would say is, you know, you could use that £50 towards getting yourself a better pair of headphones.
Absolutely. You can get a great pair of headphones for that price.
It's interesting. I'm looking at the images that are used on Amazon. Other retailers are available. And the pair of headphones they've got are the ones that I use, the P5s, which, you know, was great from a marketing point for me, because I was looking at it going, oh, that would look nice. And then I thought, hang on, £50? What? and the other restraint for me is I literally couldn't find the space to give over to such a big stand for a pair of headphones. I couldn't find that on my desk. So
yeah, it's just, I tend to just put them down. I'm not the one who needs headphones to be hung up. I can see why some people would do, you know, they are neater. But yeah, I think that's a little too expensive for something that is, you could just hang them over your monitor or put them on the desk.
But whilst I've been doing this, the I've been looking at some other things, and it's not the only stupidest expensive thing that they've got. There's the Just Mobile Alubase. Have you seen that?
Oh, yes. Have you been looking through the customers who viewed this item also?
Yeah. It's a bit of metal.
There's the Alubase.
For £40.
There's the Alurack for 50, which I'm not too sure what that does. Oh, it's...
So that had me in stitches when I saw that one. I thought, actually, that makes the headphones seem like a bargain.
The
other ridiculous one was the AluCube, which is a stand for your AluPen, which is a block of aluminium with a hole cut in it.
There's a guy with shares in aluminium somewhere thinking, I'm going to make a fortune.
I tell you what, we're in a hell of a lot of trouble when aluminium runs out.
Oh, yeah. These AluCubes will be a currency of some description.
Yeah, they'll get melted down. I've got to say, I've got the AluPen, and that is very good.
To be fair, the AluPen does look good.
It is good. It is good. I've got one, but I've only got one because it was free.
Oh, right. Even better.
I got it as a giveaway. I think I got it when I started reading Mac User magazine.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, so it was a great introductory little offer. So, yep. So I think we've pretty much agreed. And I could be putting words in your mouth here. This is not hot.
Not even remotely. This is ice cold.
Ice cold. Unless you've got money to burn, this is an absolute waste of money. Now, the other one was Software, which is a new game that I started playing. Jacob mentioned this to me a while on the show. A game called Trine 2. When I bought it, it was an extremely good value for money at £2.49 on the Mac App Store. And it is stunning visually. It's a beautiful game to behold. The story, there's a good sort of a decent sort of story running through it as well. But the dynamic of the game is really interesting because it's basically like a sideways on scroller, and you have three different characters. You have a thief, a wizard, and what's the third one? A knight. And they all have their own abilities. And you can flip between your characters using 1, 2, and 3 on your keyboard. And you need to choose the right characters to solve certain puzzles and certain sort of, you know, blockages in the game, for want of a better word. Mm. There's a lovely, like I say, sort of story runs through it. And actually, there's a very clever walk through at the beginning where it takes you through each character and what each character can do, as well as telling you the backstory from the original Trine and how we've got to this point now. Now, I think this is a good sign that I started playing it with my two children watching. They're 6 and 3, and they never said a word for the whole time I was doing it. They were absolutely spellbound by it. And because it is so pretty and so well done, and the gameplay is good as well. So it's £2.49. Have you had a go at this at all?
I've not, but I've just seen the screenshots, and it does look gorgeous.
It is really lovely, and it is just as nice to look at when you play it. And there's a lot of animated elements into that as well. It's not completely static backgrounds. By far one of the nicest games I've played for a long time, and one of the only things that's kind of even remotely tickling me Mac in terms of what the graphics card and things like that.
Yeah, so. I was going to say, I don't tend to play many Mac games simply because, well, I'm on a MacBook Air, so I'm already at a disadvantage, but yeah. You always find the Mac games, even compared to their PC equivalents, just require such a high amount of graphics and RAM and things like that. So
yeah.
I tend to shy away from them. I've got an Xbox anyway, but Trine looks like something that will run on most Macs anyway. And it does look great. The screenshots look fantastic. So I'm half tempted to pick that up, actually. That looks really good.
I tell you what, for that price, you know, it's not even the price of a cup of coffee, is it? You know, it'll certainly entertain you as long as a cup of coffee will. So I would... give it an unreserved hot, and I guess you're going to have to wait and see what you think of it.
Going off of screenshots alone, I'll go hot.
Yeah, it is
amazing.
Really, really nice to look at, and maybe that's part of the Apple aficionado in us that we like shiny things.
Yeah, definitely.
But definitely take a look at it. So we've already kind of name checked Neil this week. He's at Neil Cochran 1. So thank you to him for his suggested cool thing, even though it wasn't cool. But I think he knew that anyway. If anyone out there is listening that has got things that they would like to put forward as cool things or things that they would like us to talk about, please get in touch. You can get us, probably the best way is through the Back to the Mac Twitter feed. So that's at BTTM podcast. And you can get hold of me. The best place is probably Twitter. I am on app.net with the same name, but I've never been on there for donkeys. It's at Rich Harkness. Where can we get hold of you, Jordan?
You can get hold of me at Twitter and app.net as well. It's at Jordan Merrick, JordanMerrick. The same username for both of them. You can also reach me through my website, Sparse Bundle. That's at sparsebundle.net.
There's some great writing and articles on there. I did love your one about Google in the future. That really had me laughing. And I thought, actually, that's probably so close to the truth, it's frightening.
I'm marking this down now for a called it. So 20 years, I'm going to go back to my old website and go called it.
Yeah, RGUs, I love that term. Right, well, that was... the end of this episode. I hope you've enjoyed the show. I've certainly enjoyed recording it with Jordan this week, and next week hopefully Johnny will be back in the fold as well. He's busy this week swatting and doing exams or something, and we'll catch you next time. Bye.
That was Back to the Mac from the Q Broadcasting Network. You can follow us on Twitter at BTTM Podcast or at Q Broadcasting, or find us on the internet at Q.am. That's Q.am. Intro and outro music is used with the kind permission of Tariq Greenfield, composer and producer. Find him on the internet, www.tdmss.com. Thanks for listening.
Macintosh.
Johnny might edit a lot out.
Absolutely. What, the fact that we talked about iOS and Windows for about half of it.
Yeah, no, I don't think you'll touch that. I don't think you'll touch that. But he'll
chop and change.
I think it's really fair because, I mean, you know, we are a Mac show, but there are people who use Windows on the Mac. So
definitely, it's on the Mac at the end of the day.
It's a relevant discussion, I think, and it'll keep some of our Windows users happy as well to have some mention of it.
Well, now the Windows users we've got who listen week in, week out, going, they don't talk about Windows on this Mac podcast. This is strange.
Well, you know, Neil does that all the time.
Really?
Yeah. And it's like, but Neil, it's a Mac show. We've got to be thankful that we've got a listener.
We should have done an April Fool's one where we just did it entirely about Windows.
But you know what, I'm so out of it with Windows now, I just couldn't even do it. So
same here. I couldn't operate it, use it if I tried, and I used to use it for most of my work, and now Windows to me just as alien as OS X is to somebody on Windows.